Welcome to your turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. I hope the weather is as good in wherever you're living right now as it is here in the Washington area. Beautiful day, more like the best of May than June or July. But anyhow, glad to have you with us. Got an interesting show today. We're going to be talking with Federal Timesman Stephen Losey and Sean Riley about a number of things, the GSA situation, the bonuses there, OPM's Inspector General report on retirees, on the retirees' Social Security numbers that were exposed to hackers. And then we're going to get into the Postal Service. The House could take up postal legislation next month, and buyouts for members of the American Postal Workers Union are still up in the air, and as well as the status of your FY13 appropriations bill. So a lot of things going on. And also we're going to be speaking in studio with Joe Bodwin. He is president of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. NARF is a big push on for to get active duty federal workers to join up, because someday they will be retirees. And NARF, of course, is the one of the leading proponents of protecting the federal retirement system, and it is definitely under attack these days. So we'll be getting to Joe later on, but right now we have Steve and Sean on the line. Gang, are you there?
We're here. How are you?
Hey, folks. Thanks for doing this again. Thanks for, you guys are bat cleanup and lead off, and it is, thank you very much for that. Listen, so much stuff going on. I don't know where to begin, but start with the sexy stuff. The GSA and the bonuses. What's the deal on that?
Yeah, there's been a good bit of news breaking in the last week or so about GSA and bonuses. The most recent revelation comes from the office of Senator Claire McCaskill, who revealed that, according to GSA records, they've given more than about $1.1 million in bonuses to 84 employees who have been under investigation or who have been removed under investigation by the GSA's Inspector General, that is. She says this doesn't pass the smell test. She says this is another sign of deep, deep problems at the General Services Administration, which, as everybody knows, has been reeling for the last couple of months after the revelations of the $823,000 Las Vegas conference, which has been criticized for being just a lavish boondoggle, critics say.
And they advertised it, they being the Western region of GSA, they said intentionally that they wanted it to be over the top.
That's right. That was the quote from Mr. Jeff Neely, who is one of the lead organizers of this conference, who is no longer with GSA.
All right. And someone who was involved in this is now back. Is that correct?
Yes, Dave Foley is now back at GSA. He's at the Public Building Service. He was suspended. He is now back, but Mr. Neely is gone.
Okay, and I read your story, and of course the one we had on our homepage as well. And weren't there a high percentage of GSA employees in general that were getting bonuses?
That's right. You know, we took a look at some of the bonus statistics government-wide that were revealed by our sister paper, the Asbury Park Press, and I realized that an astounding percentage at GSA, 87% of GSA employees, got bonuses of roughly $1,200 per recipient last year. That is far above the government-wide average of roughly 32%. And when I dug further into the numbers, and I looked at the Public Building Service, which was the agency, the department that was at the center of that Western Regions Conference scandal, the percentages were even higher. 94% of Public Building Service employees got bonuses last year. And there are lawmakers such as Congressman Jeff Denham, who is a leading critic of what he views as wasteful spending at GSA, who was very angry to hear about the fact that almost everybody at GSA, practically everybody drawn breath, got a bonus last year. He said this is an outrageous cycle of waste, fraud, and abuse, and he said that GSA needs to put some deep reforms into place. Now, I reached out to GSA. There is a new slate of leaders at GSA that have been installed since the scandal broke. GSA says that it is doing a top-to-bottom review of everything, including bonuses. So we'll just have to wait and see what comes out of GSA in relation to this bonus scandal?
Well, 94% of any group getting bonuses, I mean, that just seems on the face of it ludicrous. And what does that say about the 6% who didn't get it?
maybe they didn't show up. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, they were found dead, guilty of being dead at their desk. That's really...
GSA wouldn't talk to me in great detail about these bonuses, so we don't know a whole lot about how they decided who receives these bonuses.
Right.
There are some people who have, some people have speculated that, you know, the government is under a 2-year pay freeze, and there's speculation that perhaps some managers could be getting a little freer with the bonuses to get around this pay freeze. Of course, it's hard to tell whether that is actually the case, but that's some of the speculation.
Yeah, that would be interesting to check other agencies and see if there's been an uptick in the number of people, the percentage of people getting bonuses.
Yeah.
Hey, talking about the OPM's Inspector General report on the retirees whose Social Security numbers were exposed, what's that all about?
Well, last year, the Office of Personnel Management, one of their contractors that is in charge of sending postcards out to retirees who let their health benefits lapse. These postcards are supposed to say, hey, there's an open season coming up, and you can re-enroll for FEHBP benefits. There was a bit of a snafu involving some of the data sets that were involved, the files that were involved in preparing these postcards. Social Security numbers were printed on top of about 3,000 postcards mailed out to federal they were intended to be mailed to federal retirees. They were actually sent to federal agencies. And OPM tried to call them back. They got them before after they had been delivered to federal agencies. And they say that these cards were in stacks, so only about 600 or so. 650 people's Social Security numbers were on top of these stacks. So they're saying the damage was negligible. They're offering those 650 employees credit monitoring services, but there's the IG released a report last week that wrapped OPM for the mistake that their contractor Vangent did. And is saying that OPM should offer all 3,000 retirees credit monitoring services. This is particularly interesting. It kind of comes on the heels of the TSP hacking, which also exposed the Social Security numbers and other personal information of more than 123,000 TSP participants. And that's obviously a much bigger deal. So there's kind of a bit of a rash of personal information getting exposed for federal employees and federal retirees. So it's kind of scary.
That latter thing, the mailing the postcards out, and then instead of going to people with the wrong information, they went to federal agencies. That sounds like a bad scene from a Woody Allen movie that would be cut out because it's too silly for words.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, good. Hey, how about now the buyouts? Been mail handlers, I think they've offered something like 45,000 buyouts to mail handlers.
That's absolutely right. That offer was made last month to basically all career mail handlers, both full-time and part-time. The part-timers would get a prorated share of this $15,000 buyout. What's happened, though, is this is basically in connection with the Postal Service plans to significantly downsize its network of mail processing plants. And some of the folks who work there are also represented by another union, the American Postal Workers Union. And thus far, there has been no similar offer made to APWU members. And just judging from my inbox and what we see on our blog, there's a number of people within the APWU who'd really like to know what's going on. And I think in response to that, earlier this week, the union posted a little release on its website saying that informal conversations, quote-unquote, with the Postal Service about some sort of buyout have taken place, but no formal offer has been made or discussed. Apparently, there's some other issues which neither union nor the Postal Service will discuss that are getting in the way of this.
Let me take a short break here, and then we'll be back and talk a little bit more about buyouts. We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 health care IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your health care IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition. From providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TekSystems.com.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report, provided by Raytheon.
The Royal United Services Institute, also known as RUSI, held its annual Missile Defense Conference in London May 30th through the 31st. The conference was the first opportunity following the Chicago Summit for NATO senior policymakers to publicly discuss the next steps towards maturing Europe's ballistic missile defense shield. Discussions continue around the European nations sharing a pool of SM-3 interceptors.
5 million hours of experience, 20 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Battlegrounds change, front lines evolve, but defense does not stop. Today, defense agencies should be agile, ready, and technologically advanced. Turn to Deloitte. Our global network of member firms, private sector insights, and government knowledge in technology, supply chain, analytics, and more can help defend on many fronts, anywhere. Learn how at Deloitte.com/US/DOD.
Pooling together really rewards. Van pools have now been added to the popular Pool Rewards program. If you currently drive alone to work and can carpool at least 2 days a week or form a new van pool, you may qualify for a cash incentive or reduced commuting costs. Visit CommuterConnections.org. Click on Pool Rewards to find out more. Need to find others to rideshare with? Commuter Connections provides free ride matching services too. Pool Rewards. It pays to rideshare. Some restrictions apply. Visit CommuterConnections.org today to get started.
What does it take to go from good government to great? When one agency decided to modernize an old financial system, several departments struggled to transition effectively. But one office resolved $718 million worth of systematic financial errors to quickly become an agency-wide model for new system adoption.
Visit myacuity.com/realresults to learn more. Acuity, your vision, our focus.
The CIO Council's recently released digital government strategy goes beyond mobile technology to rethink the way federal agencies manage information and interact with citizens. The shared platform approach not only addresses data, application, and device management, but also how to mitigate the threat of security breaches. Join AFSEA Bethesda on June 20th at the Bethesda North Marriott for a discussion about how agencies transform this policy into action. Register at AFSEABethesda.org/JuneBreakfast.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Sean Riley and Steve Losey from the Federal Times about a variety of things, the GSA bonuses and the postal buyouts. When these buyouts are out there, Sean, in the regular civil service, they're $25,000 as a max before deductions. But the Postal Service had a round, I believe, last year where they were offering $20,000 in two separate payments. And this one is down to, is it $15,000? Did I hear you correctly?
That is correct. And I think that's probably a reflection of the financial condition of the Postal Service. And even those are being split up into two separate installments. You know, for the mail handlers, you get, if anyone taking it would get $7,500 this December, 7,500 December 2013. And I think it's, you know, as we know, the Postal Service has some cash flow issues, and they don't know how many people are going to opt to take advantage of this, and they want to be careful about how they husband their resources.
Well, I know somebody in the auto business years ago was talking with them, and they said that they had made a terrible mistake in offering rebates because people came to expect them. Mm-hmm. And so unless they were offering some kind of really good deal, people just sat on, we just waited to buy a car, and in the hopes that it would be repeated and or even sweetened. But this may almost be a reverse psychology, in addition to the fact that the Postal Service can't afford it. But they're really sending a message that, you know, we were giving people $20,000, we're now giving them $15,000. If you want to wait a couple of years, we'll give you $10,000 or $5,000.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you feel for Postal Service employees because there are a lot of difficult calculations to make. We did, you know, there's also a separate buyout offer going outstanding to postmasters who would get $20,000. And we did a story in this week's issue about that, and was talking to a postmaster out in a rural part of Ohio that has a very high unemployment rate. And it's a really difficult decision for somebody who's, you know, this fellow could take early retirement, but, you know, he's got two teenage children, raising him as a single parent. And there are very few other job opportunities in the area that would pay what he's making with the Postal Service. So the question is, do you take the buyout? Or and get you know, at least get $20,000 and a chance to retire, or do you wait 2 years? There's sort of a grace period for postmasters whose offices are being essentially downgraded with their customer service hours cut, and after September 2014, they risk the possibility of being riffed. And I think for other postal employees like the mail handlers, the question is, do you want to hang in there? Hope that you'll be okay despite the Postal Service, you know, deteriorating finances, or take at least $15,000 and get something out of it and leave.
Well, you know, there used to be a saying, something to the effect that if you go into a Rolls-Royce dealer, if you have to ask the price of the car, you shouldn't be there. And the reverse of that is with a buyout. And if for a $25,000 buyout, or $20,000 or $15,000, as the case may be, if people who are retiring because they desperately need the money, these are probably the people who should not be retiring, correct?
I think so, because you've got to take into account that you're probably going to, you know, the total buyout is $15,000, but you've got taxes on top of that. I mean, and by the time you're done with it, you're probably going to end up with $10,000 spread over 2 years, which is, you know, $5,000 a year. That's really not that much money in the scheme of things.
Right. Well, there was a you guys had it, we had it. The Office of Personnel Management missed its estimates of the number of people who were retiring in May. They didn't miss it by much. They were very close. But is the retirement tsunami, is it here? Or do we know yet?
You know, it's kind of hard to say. The first couple of months of the year, it was up noticeably. As you said, the projections have slowed a little bit in April and May. So I haven't recrunched the numbers over last year, but things have kind of dipped down a little bit. So I think it may not be a tsunami. It's definitely a bump. It's definitely noticeable. But things have slowed down. Now, of course, there's still, you know, the second half of the year. Last year we saw a big bump in retirements in October. That was atypical. It's unclear whether we'll see more of that. It's unclear whether we'll see more buyouts towards the second half of the year, as agencies come to terms with this real dire budget situation. So, it's hard to say, but we're just going to have to keep watching. And agencies are going to have to start preparing for the possibility that large swaths of their experienced workforce could walk out the door in the next 6 months to a year or so.
Right, and October 1, I guess, is the official kickoff date if you're going to offer a buyout. The earlier you offer it in the fiscal year, the more the savings to the agency, correct?
That's right.
Now, the Postal Service, you said that the House could take up this postal legislation next month. Well, what's in that? What's that all about?
Well, this is legislation sponsored by Representative Darrell Issa, who chairs the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, and Representative Dennis Ross, who's the chairman of the subcommittee on that committee that oversees the Postal Service. This is a bill that actually came out of the committee last October. It's been stalled ever since, and there's some pretty credible speculation that the reason it's stalled is that it can't currently pass the full House. This would do a couple. It's very different from the legislation that passed the Senate in April. It would do a couple of major things. One, it would set up a sort of BRAC-like commission that would take 2 years to look at all the post offices and all the mail processing plants and come up with essentially a target list of those that should be closed. It would also, assuming that the Postal Service defaults, as it almost certainly will, on unless Congress acts otherwise, if it defaults on any major payment to the federal government, such as the annual prepayment required for retiree health care, that essentially a special control board, sort of similar to what was used in the District of Columbia back in the 1990s, would be set up that would take over the Postal Service's finances, be able to override the Postmaster General, be able to override the Postal Service's Board of Governors. But there are other provisions, one of which the Postal Service likes, which would allow it to go almost immediately within 6 months to eliminating Saturday delivery, go to five-day delivery. And a majority of members of the House are on record as opposing that under another resolution. So the question is going to be, can they compromise or come up with some changes to the legislation as it now stands that will be able to get the get a majority of House members to support it. And, in a memo a week or so ago, the House Majority Leader Eric Cantor said that the leadership would be working to bring the bill to the floor. He didn't say that it's definitely going to come up.
Well, the Postal Service has always been one of these not-in-my-backyard situations. Everybody is for savings and economy in theory, but when you talk about things like cutting back one day of delivery a week or eliminating a post office in my congressional district, then it's a bad idea.
Absolutely. And the Postal Service is trying to basically, I think, thread the needle on this. I mean, they've released poll results showing that I think a majority of Americans are basically okay with Saturday delivery. I've got family members who say they don't get anything, worthwhile on Saturday anyway. And on the post offices, what they've done is they've essentially backed off their original plan, which was to close up to about 3,700 post offices, primarily in rural areas, because those are the ones that are particularly uneconomical to run. And what they've done instead is say they're going to reduce the customer service window hours at about 13,000, out of about 32,000. And also eliminate many cases the full-time postmaster position that goes to those post offices, have those folks replaced by part-timers. And they actually say they'll save more money this way than under their original plan.
Well, you mentioned the possibility of a BRAC-like situation, the BRAC being Base Realignment and Closure Commission. And it seems to me that the only time BRAC has ever worked was in the first BRAC itself. They did come up with recommendations. They did present them to Congress. Congress okayed them or allowed them to go through. But since then, there have been some BRAC-like efforts, and most recently, I guess, with that congressional committee that was going to come up with recommendations that would be an up or down vote in the Congress, and they didn't come up with any.
You're talking about the supercommittee on
Yes.
deficit reduction? Exactly. Well, I mean, there's always the problem is that Congress is so gridlocked nowadays, and as you noted, I mean, there's always this sort of not in my backyard syndrome, which makes lawmakers particularly resistant to any reductions in federal spending that might affect their constituents, that leads them to try and outsource these kinds of jobs to a super committee or to a commission or whatever. But the problem is that there's still that doesn't get around the underlying problem that these cuts, whatever they turn out to be, will cause some pain to somebody.
It's kind of to wrap up here. Maybe gridlock is a good thing at this time for federal and postal employees because the House Republicans are proposing a number of drastic changes. The Democrats who run the Senate are saying, whatever you send over, we're not going to do it. So could that be could gridlock be their friend?
It's possible. Yeah. I mean, there's proposals coming out to hike federal employees' retirement contributions by roughly 5%. If the Republicans are for this and the Senate Democrats are against it, it ends up dying. And no news could be good news for federal employees.
Right.
The flip side of that is the pay raise issue. The 2-year pay freeze is supposed to expire after this year. President Obama's proposed a half percentage point pay raise next year. However, House Republicans are against it. They want to extend the pay freeze at least one more year. As soon as we get off, I'm going to run to the House and cover the markup of the Financial Services and General Government Bill. This is the bill that usually that funds Treasury, GSA, and a bunch of other agencies. Usually has a pay raise for federal employees for the coming
good
year.
Good point, yeah.
This year, it does not. I looked through it. I couldn't find it.
Have a good trip up there and take a copy of Alice in Wonderland with you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Sean and Steve. Be right back here, and then we're going to be talking with Joe Bodwin. He's president of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Public, private, hybrid? The options for moving to the cloud are many, and mandated transition deadlines are right around the corner. Industry leaders GTSI and HP have established a cloud center of excellence in Herndon, Virginia, specifically focused on navigating the cloud options available to agencies and to help you decide on what approach is best for your requirements. Get your head in the cloud. Contact a GTSI HP cloud computing expert and reap the benefits of increased operational efficiency and decreased program costs. Email hpccoe@gtsi.com today.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, MetLife, and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
This week's Experts in Health topic is stress management, featuring Dr. Farzaneh Sabi, OBGYN with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at the new Kaiser Permanente Gaithersburg Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sabi. The day-to-day demands of life in Washington, D.C. can be stressful. If unchecked, stress can lead to more serious medical conditions such as sleeplessness, high blood pressure, and even stroke. Here are a few tips I provide my patients on how to cope with stress. 1. Stay active. A simple walk around the block can be enough to clear your mind. 2. Eat more fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. 3. Set aside time every day to do one thing you enjoy. 4. Get more sleep. And 5. Learn to say no by accepting that you can't do it all. Contact your doctor if you're feeling anxious, depressed, or have overwhelming emotions for 2 or more weeks.
Dr. Sabi was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian magazine. To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Achieving FDCCI compliance isn't easy. This is Mike Tanner, VP of Federal for Hitachi Data Systems. Your agency can count on Hitachi for data center consolidation planning. Our government-proven solutions will help your agency operate more efficiently by protecting existing assets with improved utilization and non-disruptive virtualization, also providing one interface for all storage infrastructure. Learn how Hitachi can help your agency save real dollars. Visit Hitachi at hds.com/fed.
The Department of Defense update is brought to you by ITT Excellus.
The Pentagon and Congress are at odds over the Defense Department's budget. DOD wants an increase in premiums for retired TRICARE recipients. But House and Senate committees both took the proposal out of their versions of the Defense Authorization Act. Deputy Defense Secretary Ashton Carter says if Congress adds money for things the Pentagon doesn't want, they'll have to take money away from things the military needs to keep the country safe.
What is the power of Ingenuity? It's command, control, and communication. It's network communications that enable situational awareness among agile forces. It's beyond the line of sight, over the horizon, and on the move. It's individual radios, complete systems, and the technology that enable warfighters to communicate securely. And it all comes from ITT Excellis. Visit exelisinc.com. That's exelisinc.com. Excellis, the power of Ingenuity.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey, and I'm going to be talking with Joe Bodwin. He is president, relatively newly elected president of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, and NARF has been around forever and ever, and in the old days it was known as the place where retirees should go or people who were just about to retire, but now they've been making an outreach to active duty workers of all ages and all places because, for obvious reasons, about one-third, according to the General Accounting Office, about one-third of all people who raise their hand to take the oath and become government workers actually retire from the government, and that's a very high percentage in this day and age of job jumping. So an awful lot of people in government have a vested interest in the retirement system. What kind of annuity, what sort of pension are they going to get, what kind of benefit? And I guess you guys, somebody once described you as like a law firm with one client and one issue, and that is the federal worker retiree slash, and the issue is the retirement system.
Good morning. I was waiting for your question. Good morning, Mike. And that is true. We have been around since 1921, and we've been around for 91 years. Our sole purpose at that time, and it still is to work on protecting the benefits of not only the retired federal employees, but the active federal employees. And it started way back in 1921 when there was no representation, and the workers there, there's 14 of them, met here in Washington, D.C., and formed the National, at that time, was a retired Federal Employees Association. But since then, we have grown. At one time, we were close to 500,000 members. And the whole reason being that, unlike a union that represents just a certain portion of the workers, we take and represent about 4.5 million active federal employees and retirees. And we have five lobbyists that work Capitol Hill all the time, trying to make sure that the benefits that the federal workers and or retirees are entitled to are left in place, and they don't become sacrificial lambs where Congress will cut them arbitrarily and after people retire after 30, 40, 50 years, some of them.
Well, NARF, traditionally, as long as I've been on the beat, which is James Buchanan was president, but NARF's always had what's considered one of the best lobbying outfits on Capitol Hill, not just among the federal and postal groups, but of everybody, that represent people on the Hill. Joe, your background, and I guess for purposes of disclosure here, I am a NARF member, so you are my president, but I speak to you with reverence and respect, I hope.
Fascinated
by your background. You were in the Air Force. You were a radar operator. I was a radar operator briefly in the Army until a plane overflew our van, and we didn't spot it. Came in at 600 miles an hour. But you were based in Germany.
I was. From 53 to 56, I was stationed in Germany, and right on in Germany, next to the Czechoslovakian border. And our job at that time was to control the fighters that protected the German airspace from the Russians at that time. So,
well, the Fulda Gap was where they were going to come through, I guess, if they came.
It was, and it was an interesting thing. Like you said, I was a radar operator, and that's where I first became interested in working as a radar operator and later on as an air traffic controller.
Well, that fascinates me because your background is criminal investigation or criminal studies, and you were at FAA as a radar operator or a controller and then a supervisor and accident inspector. That must have been a grisly job at times.
It was. My degree from St. Anselm's College in Manchester is in criminal justice. At one time, I thought I would either go local police, state police, or with the FBI or something of that nature, even though I was working as the air traffic controller. But then after 20 years of controlling traffic up in that area, I was asked to come down to Washington because of my background in my training to work in the accident incident analysis staff. And from basically 1978 until 2008, I worked every major accident that we had in the United States and even some outside of the United States, which was very interesting.
I'll bet it was. So much going on now. We won't get it. We've taken the legislative look with the Federal Times guys. But the threat to the retirement system, how real is this?
I believe, and people hear this all the time. They say it's almost like calling Wolf or something. Yep. But I think that the threat today is greater than it's ever been. And why? I think it's because of the increasing debt that the country is facing and experiencing. Where when it was $6 or $7 trillion, they didn't consider it, I guess, that important. But now that it's up, I understand, over $14 trillion and climbing every day, that the Congress needs to find some way to reduce the debt and to reduce their expenses. And NARF being representing about 4.5 million workers and retirees seem to be like the low-hanging fruit. They're going to take and come to us first, and they've already, the president, through his unilateral decision to freeze pay, have cost NARF members some $60 billion, or the active federal employees some $60 billion. But that's just the beginning. I think we're going to see a lot more coming down. And I don't understand why 4.5 million people don't want to join NARF, because we are the only organization in town that whose sole purpose is to work to protect their benefits.
I think the times are so different, too. I've been a union member since I was 17, one union or another. My four children, who are in some respects a whole lot like me, wouldn't consider joining a union. It's just it's a different generational thing. They think they don't need it or it's not required in their jobs. How do you get around something like that, or do you?
I think the decision whether or not to join a union is not anything that NARF really looks at or considers, but unions have their purpose. They protect, as you belong to a union. I did. I belonged to the National Air Traffic Controllers Union way back when. And at that time, I think unions had a purpose. They protect the workers on the job. But once somebody leaves the job, the unions pretty much write them off. So once they retire, there's no one there other than NARF to take and watch over their benefits and protect them. The problem we run into is there are so many people that think that, okay, the government told me I was going to get this retirement when I retire, and the government will keep their word. Well, you know, it's whatever the government can give us, the government can take us. So we are there to lobby Congress to make sure that whatever the government promised you, that they give you as far as whatever you're entitled to.
I think there's a different mindset, too. For the last 40 years, government benefits, that is, benefits for government employees, have done nothing but go up. You know, they went from the high five to a high three system. They instituted various kinds of insurance. They put the inflation adjustments into the retirement system so that people got catch-ups with inflation. And I think for some people, I've heard this before, they'll say they can't, they being the Congress or they being there, they can't do that. But they can, of course.
That is true. And if you look at, a lot of people will criticize the government workers, the fat cats and everything else, and there's too many of them. But if you go back and look at 20, 30 years ago, we've got fewer government workers today than you had then. And we have over 100 million more people that we service. So if you look at a one-to-one ratio, the government workers today are doing more for the country than they did 20 or 30 years ago. And, you know, they talk about the benefits and your retirement. Well, the retirement is totally funded by the workers themselves, by the money they contribute. So it's not costing the government anything. They do contribute to the health care, the federal FEHBP, the Federal Employees Health Benefit Programs. But as you can see, without a government workers protecting the country, where would we be, Mike?
Yeah, I think we know why you're such a target. Take a short break here. We'll be right back on WFED 1500 AM.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 health care IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your health care IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition. From providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at techsystems.com, TEKSystems.com.
Symantec and Carahsoft present Protecting and Securing Your Data in a Virtual World, Data Center Consolidation and Optimization. The widespread adoption of virtualization and reduced budgets are driving tremendous changes in the federal IT landscape. In the face of all this change, one thing remains constant: the need to protect and restore your agency's data at a moment's notice, whether it resides on a physical or virtual server. How are agencies addressing this challenge? What technologies and best practices are available? Does your agency have any best practices you would like to share on this topic? Tune in on June 12th on WFED, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, for a panel discussion of industry and government experts at 12 noon for protecting and securing your data in a virtual world. Brought to you by Symantec and Carahsoft. For more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword virtual, or thevirtualbackupplan.com.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by LearningTree International.
LearningTree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by LearningTree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Many factors affect job satisfaction. Hours, teammates, and opportunity can all make or break an experience. That's why it was an impressive achievement when 100% of employees surveyed recently reported they were proud to work for Acuity Inc. With a 766% growth rate and recognition as a best place to work, Acuity is attracting talented, passionate professionals and keeping them happy. Learn more. Visit myacuity.com/careers.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Battlegrounds change, front lines evolve, but defense does not stop. Today, defense agencies should be agile, ready, and technologically advanced. Turn to Deloitte. Our global network of member firms, private sector insights, and government knowledge in technology, supply chain, analytics, and more can help defend on many fronts, anywhere. Learn how at Deloitte.com/US/DOD.
This is Mark Amtower.
For 27 years, I've advised hundreds of large and small contractors on the best marketing tactics to reach key government buyers and influencers. Collectively, my clients have made billions of dollars by maximizing the value of their contracts. If you need to maximize the value of your GSA schedule, GWAC, or IDIQ, or you need to raise your overall visibility in the government market, we need to talk. Make certain your marketing budget pays major dividends. Contact me at federaldirect.net.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Joe Baudouin. He is president of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. And I referred to him at the top of the show as newly elected. I think I qualified it. I said relatively newly elected. I, of course, meant by Egyptian or Russian standards because you have been in office. In fact, you're up for reelection coming up in August at NARF's convention in Reno.
That is true. We have our semi-annual, biannual, convention in Reno this year from August 26th to August 30th. And at that time, that's when we elect or re-elect our officers, and we deal with various issues. In fact, one of the highlights of that is going to be your presence.
I will be there. Yeah, delighted. Never been to Reno, and also found out working with Chuck Tumanis to make arrangements. And you can't get there from here. The shortest flight is like 7 hours. You have to go through somewhere else. And I thought about flying to Las Vegas and then renting a car and driving up, but I'm an East Coast boy, and it turns out it's a 4.5-hour drive or more than that. But looking forward to that. Hey, we were talking before the break about the fact that a lot of people now are just not joiners. You don't have to buy a newspaper. You can read it online, at least until it goes broke, and then you decry the fact that it's out of there. But people seem to be too busy or whatnot. And during the prequel to the show here, you said something about electronic chapters, and I was not aware of those. But I have a couple of friends, and I've shown them the NARF magazine, which I have in front of me here, and I've said, you know, the price of the membership, the magazine is worth it alone. The lobbying is icing on the cake, and I got some really good advice this morning from David Snell, your director of retirement services. He helped out a reader of mine who'd sent me an email. So a lot of advantages to joining it, and I don't know what all kinds of discounts you get as unions often do, but you talked about an electronic chapter, and that would seem to be a dream come true for people who live on their smartphones or live through computers. How does that work?
Well, about the beginning of last year, or shortly after the new national officers took office in November of 2010, we started talking about ways that we could offer a better service to potential or prospective members, as well as to our current members. And there was a suggestion that since most people today, as you just mentioned, do everything over the Internet. They read their newspapers, they pay their bills, they communicate with people. A lot of people don't even buy newspapers anymore, and doing away with phones, and because the Internet is their number one prime source of communications. So we came up with this electronic chapter. An electronic chapter will provide the member with every service that we presently provide, only they will do it over the Internet, and there will be no paper going between headquarters and them, except for the magazine. They do get the magazine. And we are providing this service for $40 a month, and that is the year. A year. Oh, my gosh, a year. Thank you very much. Chuck is here correcting me, and that's okay. And we started off with 5 members back in March of last year, and we have close to 4,000 members in that electronic chapter. The active federal employees and the recent retirees appear to really enjoy that. It's something that they can relate to because now they don't have to go to chapters if they don't want to. They can do everything electronically.
Okay. You have, you said 2 chapters?
We do have 2 chapters. We have a chapter in Florida. It's a federation chapter, or state chapter, if you will. And then we have the national chapter, Chapter 2363, that operates out of headquarters. And that is the one that has close to 4,000. The one in Florida is coming up on a couple hundred members. So that one is also growing.
I deal with Mark Harris down in Florida quite a bit, very active guy. Maybe he'll jumpstart you. One of the things that makes NARF different from other organizations is the postal unions and the federal unions make no bones about being political. I think they all endorsed President Obama last time around. They have, with the exception of when President Nixon's reelection, when a number of the unions endorsed him, but I think the postal and federal unions have consistently endorsed Democratic candidates for president all the way back, and they will support some Republicans for state and local level, but they don't really like to talk about it very much. But NARF goes out of its way to be, what do you call it, nonpartisan or bipartisan?
We are nonpartisan. We are political, but we are nonpartisan. And at every biannual conventions, we set up our own legislative agenda, and then we work with all the legislators, trying to persuade them, if we can, to take and support our legislative agenda. But we definitely are not partisan.
Okay. Now, one of the things that fascinates me, my mother had Alzheimer's and, you know, healthy all her life, and then the last couple of years were a harder show for her and hard on the family, too. NARF's sort of adopted Alzheimer's as its fund, its campaign.
We did. A number of years ago, we started off with supporting NARF Alzheimer's research, and we are the biggest donor to Alzheimer's research, with hopefully by the time of the convention this year, we will have donated about $10 million.
That's astounding. And you are the largest contributor to the Alzheimer's research?
We are. We are the largest. And we are recognized usually by the Alzheimer's Association every year because we do donate about $1 million over a 1 or 2 year period. And we have been doing that for the last few years.
Well, obviously, the obvious answer is you want people to join NARF, active or retired. But what advice do you have for, say, people who are currently working for the government? They're reading the news. They say, I've seen this before. As you pointed out, some of this appears to be crying wolf or crying fire in a crowded theater. But how serious are the threats to the feds?
The threats are there. And if you look at even your earlier discussion, if you look at what is being threatened, the government workers are being threatened by all of the actions that Congress has taken. Again, we go to the Hill. I've testified 3 times now. The last time I was testifying was in front of a Senate committee on the OPM delays in paying annuities. We took a stand that was not acceptable, that there were over 58,000 and 60,000 member backlog, and we recommended a number of ways that OPM could increase the service. And at the time, OPM even invited us up to their office where, just as a side, John Berry joined our organization.
Oh, he did. Okay.
So he said, I value your support, I value your information, and how can we work together to resolve this problem? So we came up with ways that he could do it. As you said, Dave Snell, part of our NARF benefit service, and others are working with all kinds of members and prospective members, trying to help them resolve certain issues with OPM and others.
Okay. Listen, Joe Woden, thank you very much for being here today. We're going to get back, and I guess I'll see you in Reno.
So we look forward to
everybody that. Have a good week, and buckle up. We'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m.